Welcome to Deft Decisions in Chaotic Conditions, How Experts Create Order from Turmoil, the thought-provoking series on how to set, align, and implement priorities. Here's the host of our show, management consultant, speaker, educator, and president of Business Alignment Strategies, Pat Lynch.
Welcome. I am Pat Lynch, president of Business Alignment Strategies. I have as my guest today Ann Negendack, who is the owner of Sensible Space Organizing Services here in Long Beach. Welcome, Ann.
Thank you, Pat. I'm glad to join you today.
Thank you. Before we get started, I just want to let people know that the purpose of this interview is to get some insights into how to set priorities and ensure that they are aligned with those of the organization. So what I'd like to do, Ann, is just have you tell us a little bit about your background, and then we'll get into the questions.
I would be pleased to. I just need to say to you, I'm so glad to be able to talk to you about this topic because it's really a topic that I've spent my whole career implementing in organizations. So this is so exciting for me today to talk about this.
Oh, good.
My present business, Sensible Space Organizing Services, has been in existence since 2002. And what the business does is helps our clients in both business and residential settings figure out how to deal with their physical space, but of course inherent in that is dealing with the processes that oftentimes get the physical space to be such a disaster as it oftentimes is by the time we're called in. Mm-hmm. So I've been working with clients for the last 7 years, helping them with that. Before that, I was in the public sector in a position of some responsibility, really helping implement change and helping implement improving the processes that provided public service delivery. I also have my MBA from Long Beach State and received that MBA a number of years ago. So the formal training of a master's program has also helped me understand the breadth of what's involved in my work with clients, and of course many of them have businesses. Oftentimes they're operating a business out of their residence, but operating a viable business and are expanding and really need the help of figuring out, okay, how do we change our processes that worked informally well with when the business was small, but now that the business has grown, you know, we've got to go to a much more formal process. And so they haven't even recognized that that's what they're suffering from. But it's fun for me to come in and help with that as well. So, and that, I think, gives the formal education background and then also a lot of work experience to bring to the table for clients. So.
Right. So you have several different perspectives. And basically, Ann, what I, view you as doing is your greatest value, I think, is really in helping people simplify their lives and improve their productivity.
Yes, and that's part of what how we describe the services that we offer is that we, by simplifying it, we reduce their costs and improve their accomplishments and also create some opportunity for them to improve their bottom line.
Right. So you are exactly the right person we need to speak with about setting priorities.
I think so too.
We're in the right place. Okay. So let me start by asking you, if you would, to describe the types of situations that you find yourself setting priorities and maybe explaining how you set them, how you help your clients set them. Really, we're interested in both the process by which you help them set priorities and also if you use any specific tools or methods you could share with people as well, please.
Certainly. And there's really two types of settings that I'd like to talk about today. One is the one-on-one work, and then the other is when there is an organization that the work that I'm implementing affects. So it's really more of a group process.
Okay.
So if we can talk first about the individual, mm-hmm. and do that. Let me just sort of do a step-by-step of what I experience, and then, Pat, you can tell me when you think I should provide some more detail.
Okay.
In working with a client one-on-one, how I start is to come in and interview the client about what it is that they want to accomplish, and it's my training as a planner, mm-hmm. that I need to find out what it is that they want to achieve. And oftentimes they've called me in because they think they know how to get there, but they find out that they don't know how to get there.
That does sound familiar.
And we all struggle with that.
Yes.
And, clarity often comes through just the discussion. But what I do in my interview process is make sure that it's really clear that to me and also to the client what it is that they want to, where they want to be at the end. Mm-hmm. Then we talk about the kinds of things that can't change for whatever kinds of reasons. And then I also try to explore, how important are these other kinds of things that I hear you talking about, but I think are partial obstacles to the process of getting to the end result. Because it's important for both the client and for me to know where they want to be at the end. Because if it's not clear mm-hmm. about the end product, then it's going to be hard to measure success, it's going to be hard to measure accomplishment, it's going to be really hard for me to figure out how to get there.
Right.
I don't know where the destination is.
Okay, so first you reach clarity about the end result, then you identify those things that cannot change for whatever reason, and then of the remaining things, you find out how important those are that you perceive maybe obstacles, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And oftentimes there's a perception about some things that can't change that don't have any apparent reason for being there as must-haves.
Okay.
So I keep track of those as we go along and do a lot of coaching in the process, because sometimes what a client says is insurmountable or unchangeable is only because they see it that way.
Okay.
Not necessarily because there's a legal, financial, or institutional reason for it. Mm-hmm. It's just sort of has always been that way.
Kind of a sacred cow.
Some sort of, sacred cow that's, there's no real apparent reason for it. But I don't challenge the client at that in the early stages.
Okay.
But I keep track of that.
Okay.
And then I lay out a recommended process mm-hmm. for the client to agree to, mm-hmm. and then we start the work. Now, oftentimes the client says, I want to do this step earlier, and oftentimes it's a step that really needs to wait later in the process. Mm-hmm. My best example is that, people will say, I want to get the containers. I've got all of these supplies. And that's, in doing the physical part, mm-hmm. which is what I think people can often identify with.
Yeah, absolutely.
What that comes at the end, not at the beginning. And it's a common misperception about the work that I do, because we really have to get through the existing setting, winnow down the existing either possessions or process mm-hmm. to get to what's truly important. And then as we get to the end, then we can sort of put things away.
So
that's in both the metaphorical and the physical part of it.
Yes, and both are important. That raises kind of an interesting question, which is, how do you handle, so when you are setting the process, essentially you're saying, I'm laying out the priority steps, the priority order of the steps for the client, yet sometimes people are resistant to that, and they're resistant to your priorities. They want to fill the containers as opposed to maybe clearing some of the clutter first. So how do you deal with people when you're trying to reach agreement on how do we proceed? Because I think this happens in organizations as well as one-on-one. We're trying to decide, how are we going to prioritize the steps that we have to do, and there's disagreement or resistance.
Well, I have the advantage in that the client has called me.
Okay.
So they've already figured out, and I sometimes have to tactfully remind them, the reason they've called me is because what they've done so far hasn't worked.
Yes. Okay, good point.
So there's not a – so a lot of the initial barriers are reduced. Now, talking about organizational changes – in working with and with multiple clients, you know, multiple mm-hmm. people in an office, say an office setting, that I need to make sure that everybody feels that they're involved mm-hmm. to break down their barriers, because it's different on one-on-one, mm-hmm. because those barriers have already been addressed. They've already said, this isn't working, we need to proceed with a new tack.
Yeah.
When there's a group setting in an office with people who can't see what's wrong, I try to show them milestones along the way of, wow, now you can find what you need, you know, what kinds of things are really bugging you, sort of what information can I carry back to your boss in a neutral setting so that you can maybe get them to hear something you've not been able to say to them directly, mm-hmm. give feedback about improving the staff's work environment, and not be judgmental about anybody in the process, so that
right.
I'm not perceived as an enemy or a threat. Because oftentimes in a workplace setting, and there's multiple people, it's like, why do we need her?
Right. And I think that would be true of anyone and of any type of change, not just in setting priorities, that people are resistant to things that they know. You know, and even when those things are not working anymore, it seems more scary to go off into the unknown than to keep doing what we are comfortable with.
And organizationally, when you're spending time and money on processes that have been in place and been layered on and layered on that are so unnecessary, I think that's a real vulnerability for businesses, because think of the expense of all these processes that are don't have any purpose. Nobody can even tell you why you're doing them, because we've always done it that way.
Right. Right.
It's such a telling and sort of a very fake, you know, what I try to make that is make that the killing point for then the processes. But it's there's a lot of fear when a consultant shows up on the scene.
Oh, yeah.
As you know, too, from your work.
Right.
So I address that in some really simple ways. I bring food with me. Well, you know, it's
yeah, I'm laughing because you're exactly right.
You know, I make sure that the frontline people get a friendly face when they meet me, that I'm extremely polite and deferential to them and listen to them as well as I listen to the client.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there are times when there's that conflict between the client and what the staff wants, and so I try to show ways to the client of implementing the change a little bit more tactfully, because I've had a lot of experience in that in very public settings, mm-hmm. and dealing with what's really fear.
Yes.
It's fear.
Yes.
Fear-based. And as we know, fear is not a rational emotion.
Usually not.
So, anyway.
Okay. Okay, so I've taken you off a little bit. So in terms of how you're setting priorities, you know, you have some conflict, so you're moving forward. How do you make sure that your priorities are – well, let me go back and just stay here. You said that when – if I understood you, that you go in and you say these are the steps. Can you kind of give us an idea of how you have – the process by which you created – those steps in the first place? In other words, I think a lot of people are okay with following directions and saying these are the six steps we have to do. Others, I believe, are at a stage at which they say, well, how do we create these six steps?
And that's something that I've discovered, I think, in a way that's actually not typical.
Okay.
Because I can see the end, mm-hmm. and I can see the big picture, which I think is what I would recommend. Okay, first of all, you need to see where you want to be,
mm-hmm.
and think of it as a map. Okay, you know you want to get to Bakersfield.
Okay.
And you know that between here in Southern California and Bakersfield, there's a huge mountain range. And so before you get to Bakersfield, you're going to need to be able to get over that mountain range. Mm-hmm. And you also know that it's going to take you some time to get there, but you need to be there by noon.
Okay.
So I work backwards then. Okay, to get there, what are the kinds of things that I need? I don't need to get a vehicle in Bakersfield. I need to get a vehicle in Southern California.
Okay.
So that needs to be an early step. Mm-hmm. Or I need to get arrange some sort of transportation. So I use time.
Okay.
I'm very much deadline driven. I use, you know, we only have 6 hours or 6 weeks to get this done.
Okay.
How do we sequence out our time to get there?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, and I also then share that sequencing with the client.
Okay.
And I always define the client as the person who's hired me and will be paying the bill,
okay,
so to speak, because I think it's easy to get distracted about who the client is.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a strong personality in the office tries to insert themselves as being the client, and I think that's one of the risks of this is you lose sight of who's driving the project.
Right.
As an aside. But as to setting priorities and steps, you have to be able to look at, okay, the destination, the big picture, what is it we want to accomplish, and then go change your focus to look at the steps along the way.
Okay.
So you have to be able to pull back, focus in, pull back, focus in. Because sometimes you find that the road, the grapevine's closed, and you've got to go through Lancaster and Palmdale to get to Bakersfield.
Okay. So you've got to be flexible. And definitely, even when you're setting priorities, realizing that things may not go as planned.
Exactly.
Okay.
But if the goal is to get to Bakersfield, does it really matter that you have to go through Palmdale and Lancaster?
Okay. Okay. So those are some good, I think, criteria for deciding, you know, how do we set priorities? I think another, you know, a related question then is how do you make sure that the priorities that you're setting are aligned with those of the organization in a group setting, or with other departments or areas that are affected, or even with individuals? Maybe, you know, how do you make sure they're aligned with other things? For example, someone working out of the home, how do you make sure that the business doesn't exceed its boundaries and go into some, you know, non-work areas or that type of thing?
The way that I take that issue, is to continually provide feedback and work on maintaining clarity with the client.
Okay.
So if I see that the aspects of the project that they're working on is not staying as focused as it needs to be, I will say that to the client. I will say, you know, you've got things scattered everywhere. Why do you have things scattered everywhere? Why don't you centralize some of these items? Why don't you have, you know, invest in something more efficient?
Mm-hmm.
And I will use the questioning mode,
okay,
as a method to get the client to think, because it's not valuable to anybody for me to be judgmental.
Right.
And if they say, well, I have to have the phone in this corner of the building because it's the only place the phone company can provide a link, and I can't have wireless here because of the lead paint on the wall, for
mm-hmm.
example, then it's like, okay, so we're going to that's something we're going to have to work around.
Okay.
But if it's, oh, I never thought about moving the phone to my desk, mm-hmm. then then I'll say, well, let's try that. I mean,
so really,
for a simplistic example.
Right. But so one of your roles really is that of, you know, challenging or pushing back and, you know, maybe creating some options that people are pointing out some options that people who are, you know, so closely associated with something really don't see.
Right, or perhaps nobody in the organization has been, quote, brave enough to raise the issue with them.
Okay. Yes, that is, you know, certainly politics may play a part in any organization, and that could be an obstacle. Okay. So are there specific tools or methods that you use, or are you do you operate more by process? Can you speak to that?
Well, what I do is all about process.
Okay.
And what, because oftentimes I'm brought in because the process that's being used is no longer working, as I mentioned mm-hmm. earlier in the discussion. So in a way, it's hard for me to describe process versus technique
okay.
because they're so intertwined. Mm-hmm. Some of the techniques I use are lists. Mm-hmm. And which outlines the steps in the process. And another technique is continually providing confirmation, working for confirmation from the client that we're, you know, this is where we're going, mm-hmm. this is how we're going to get there, we're a quarter of the way now, mm-hmm. we still have these other steps to go, you're going to see progress after the next step. So in a sense, reassuring them that there is a path mm-hmm. to get to where they want to be.
Okay.
Because remember, they brought me in because they can't figure out how to get there.
Right, right.
There's no roadmap to Bakersfield for them.
Okay. Okay. Now, how can you, given your expertise and the ways that you look at, you know, setting priorities with different clients, can you suggest some ways that these processes or techniques could be used to help people set and align priorities when they have experienced things like many organizations have, such as serious budget cuts or layoffs or furloughs?
One of the most important techniques that I recommend in situations where organizations are going through a crisis, and certainly laying off people, having furloughs, is an organizational crisis because of the impact that it has on the people that are not only staying but the people who are leaving, mm-hmm. is to make sure that everybody understands what's going on. And that doesn't mean to say that they're involved in the decision-making process, mm-hmm. but once the decision has been made, to make sure that the decision's communicated to the affected parties and also that they understand what the timetable is and the impact on them. Okay. Because it really comes down to how is it affecting me?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so if you make sure that you remember that as either being the change implementer, which is what I'm often done, or coaching the client, mm-hmm. who's, let's say, is the CEO of a business who's laying off a third of their workforce and putting the remaining ones on furlough for, you know, a day a week or something,
right.
that all the affected people know what's involved and they at least have a sense of, okay, I know this is bad, but this is where we're going. So that they're part of the caravan going to Bakersfield.
Right, right.
So they know Bakersfield's destination. They may not like going through Palmdale and Lancaster. No offense to those cities, but
because
yes. it's a lot longer path. But so they'll know that, okay, we're going to have delays in getting supplies. If you get a complaint from a vendor, who do you refer that call to? What do you tell them? So there's just some sense of, okay, you know, we know where we're going.
Right.
I think that provides a great deal of assurance in uncertain times to
right.
everyone.
Right. And I do think, you know, I agree that it's important both for people to know where they're going and creating that communication link or links so that people continue to, they always know where they, it can always open the map and say, we are here, and not have there be any confusion with that.
And even something as important as, okay, you know, paychecks, we've got money to cover that, we're not going to have a problem with payroll, you know, I know, you know, you don't have to worry about your checks bouncing, you know, hopefully that's indeed the case.
Right.
If there is going to be an issue with cash flow, we'll let you know as soon as we know that. You know, so people have the sense of, okay, you're thinking about me too. It's not just about you.
Yes. Yes. And I really think that is critical because so often that seems to get lost. And we're focusing on some things and we sometimes ignore the human side of it. Okay. How do you know, once you have set the priorities, and you're working through them, how do you know whether those priorities are working or whether it's time to either change them or get rid of them or make some adjustment?
That is a very interesting question. One of the ways that I judge that is the amount of difficulty in getting through some of the steps, that if there are tremendous obstacles and tremendous resistance, or the resources aren't there, or the path, or it ends up we're starting to veer off from where we need to go, those are all signs that maybe there's a better way. And it goes back to what we talked about a little bit earlier, is that you need to stay flexible and never lose sight of where you're trying to get to. Mm-hmm. Because it's losing sight of that final destination is where it's easy to get take a wrong turn.
Right.
And certainly I've had projects where we've ended up at a dead end. And so we need to say, this didn't work. You know, we need to try something else because this is not working. What we all thought was going to be the right path, you know, we're headed towards Santa Maria.
Right. And I think that's important as well. And in terms of being able to say, oops, you know, we need to make a U-turn here. You know, go back and try something else. This didn't, it is a dead end. And I think that sometimes may get in the way of people's being able to change or, correct, do a correction to the priorities that were set. And I think that's why keeping that big picture in mind, the destination in mind, is so important. And I think, too, If people agree on that end, we agree we're going to Bakersfield, well, there are lots of ways to get there. And so then the decisions are all about which path do we take. And that's a lot easier type of decision, I think, than if we don't agree whether we're going to, Bakersfield or San Francisco.
Right. And I think it's often easy for the discussion to talk about the path without being clear about where it is you want to be.
Say more about that, if you would, please.
Well, for example, you can start out saying that you want, as the client, we want to be in Bakersfield. Mm-hmm. Well, then you go into a staff meeting, and the discussion is, well, San Francisco is such a better destination. And then all of a sudden, you realize there's no clarity about where it is that you want to be. Because if the client says and the organization acknowledges, okay, we're going to Bakersfield, then it's so much easier to direct the discussions then, okay, how do we most efficiently get there, as opposed to, is it Bakersfield, or is it Salt Lake City, or is it San Francisco, or, well, if we take the path to Palmdale, then we sort of have our choices of getting to any of those 3, and so then we could sort of take that one and not have to decide yet.
Ah, so we're putting off the decision.
Putting off the decision.
Okay.
Or if then the client says, well, we don't really know if we want to go to, maybe we really do want to go to Santa Maria. You know, it's, and then it's like, okay, you know, we need to know where we're going here.
Okay.
And so my role is to say, okay, we've got to have a clarity of purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And because there are people in every organization who love to create the dust storm.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my job to say, okay, we need to make sure we know where you want me to help you get to.
Right.
Because creating the dust storm is a way of control and a way of keeping the status quo and all kinds of other diversions, and we've all known people in organizations like that.
Right. The other thing that comes to mind also, and I see it as really kind of either a form of resistance, whether it's conscious or unconscious, I think it's a form of resistance, and that is people tend to focus more on the methodology than on, you know, setting the priorities, which may or may not require the use of that methodology. And I think sometimes people get hung up on that because they know it, and it may not serve them well.
Well, and I liken it to the client who says, in a residential setting, who says, I've got all these great containers. I want to do the containers.
Yes.
Put everything in containers. And it's like, well, what is it that you have? What is it that you need to keep? What is it that you need to have accessible?
Exactly.
Not the containers because they're pretty.
Yes. Yes. And they're here in my hands, and I can hold them, and I'm secure.
Right. When all they really do is contribute to the problem.
Right. Right.
Unless you've taken these other steps to winnow down and provide some focus about what really matters.
Yes. Yes, and I think that really is getting to the heart of the matter. So, is there anything else that you would like to say about setting priorities, aligning priorities, or anything that you would like to share?
My experience has shown that it's very difficult for most organizations to be able to, in the everyday course of things, keep their priorities clear.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very important to set some time aside, maybe annually, every 6 months, for the leaders of the organization to get back together and say, okay, this is where we're headed. This is how we're getting there. We want to make sure everybody knows where we're going. And if there are other issues that have come up, because, of course, there always are, strange curves in the road,
mm-hmm.
you know, let's talk about those. Let's talk about how we achieve those, because it's very easy to get caught up in the day-to-day process and to lose track of heading for Bakersfield.
Right. And so is there something that you recommend to people when you find that they say, you know, we don't have time. Anne, don't you see what's going on out in the economy? We don't
right.
have time for this kind of planning.
Right. And if a meeting's set up to be efficient, you could, in a half an hour, make sure everybody knows, remember, we're heading to Bakersfield, and, you know, what's come up that's keeping us from getting there, and let's make sure we know what those issues are, and that the client, the leader of the organization, knows what's impeding the progress of that. And I don't think you need to spend even a whole day, a half an hour, once a month, make sure everybody's headed in the same direction.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us, Anne. This concludes our conversation with Anne Negendack. She is the owner of Sensible Space Organizing Services. If you would like to know more about the value that Anne provides to her clients, you may find her website at www.sensiblespace.org. That's www.sensiblespace, all one word, .org. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Pat.
We hope you enjoyed this edition of Deft Decisions in Chaotic Conditions, How Experts Create Order from Turmoil, brought to you by Business Alignment Strategies. If you would like to learn how you can ensure that your organization's people, programs, and processes are aligned with its goals, contact us at www.businessalignmentstrategies.com.